and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Happy Monday morning, everybody. Whoa, Mama got here when, Chris? About 40 seconds ago. I made it. You can run from 42nd and 6th in 4 minutes if you really need to. It is the...
Look at you. You're all sweaty. Ew.
On top of going through the change, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. A big, big show despite everything. We have UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter coming up to talk about Afghanistan.
Right.
We have Eric Bollard, Senior Fellow at Media Matters, to co-host Right Wing World. Betsy Reed, author of the hilarious Going Rouge, Sarah Palin and an American Nightmare. And right here live with me, the Rude Pundit, all 3 hours.
Yay.
I certainly hope one of you is prepared.
It's an alluring glisten, though, the sweat. That's...
Mama has had a morning, Christopher.
Why? What happened?
As you know, if you've been paying attention to the fun facts of the Stephanie Miller move to New York... All right, let me just pull this down. Yes, landlords will not allow me to put in a dog door.
Right.
Max and Fred used to a dog door their whole life. I have a little patio out there.
What do you mean little patio?
It's a little patio. It is. It's a little brick patio.
In your place in New York, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So Fred peed in the house at some point, so I was cleaning that up. But without benefit of the stuff that you clean up dog stuff with, because I wasn't anticipating that sort of thing, you see. Then the trains were running late, and but I made it, and here I'm here. And I left the door to the patio open, so everything may be gone in my apartment when I get back, but I have no time to deal with this. And you, on the other hand, houseboy.
What?
Over there in L.A., it's raining, apparently.
It is raining. Yes, there's moisture falling from the sky.
And what happened to you this morning at Mama's crumbling old
well,
gray gardens?
Mama has a pool cover, an automatic pool cover, that if rain...
Yeah, when it rains, you got to put the pump on or else the whole pool cover will collapse and then it will come out of your salary.
Yeah.
So your point is what?
So it was dark and raining this morning when I had to go outside and around in the mud putting the pump on the... I hope I did it right.
Listen, I've been picking up diarrhea because my dog's food isn't here yet for several days. Oh. You try that. Rude, have you picked up diarrhea on a New York City sidewalk? If you haven't, I recommend it.
No. But thank you for picking it up because I have stepped in the residue.
Yes, no, because I've heard that they shoot you in New York if you don't.
There's roaming patrols of people that do that, yes.
And can I just say... In the eye, like that guy in The Godfather. That's what I'm told the penalty is.
Yeah, it's really just a lawless land out there.
Yes.
It's like Road Warrior here in New York.
Can I just say, Chris, that Fred, who is only 10 months old, Mom is baby dog. Some of the tough New York dogs, Ruder, they're roughing him up a little bit. And I'm not enjoying it. They're a little bit. They're slamming them on the ground. They're like a bada boom.
It's a New York welcome. It's an initiation.
Yeah,
it's a greeting.
White Hollywood dog, and you're like the boom. There you go again.
Yep, and one day he'll be giving it back because he'll be so horribly scarred by it.
Nobody touches Max. Max is 130 pounds, but Fred's getting roughed up a little by the other kids at school, and Mama's a little upset.
Why isn't Max providing protection?
Yeah.
And you know me, I'm already an over busybody mother. You know that, Chris. I'm like, hey, stop it! Stop it! Get off him! I'm very, very exercised. All right, so, wow, Christopher, what a weekend. The Big Dog Global Holiday Party was Friday night.
And how was that?
Our fine syndicators.
Wish I could have gone.
Ed and Wendy Schultz were there. We can't afford that.
I know you can't.
Ed and Wendy Schultz were there. There was, let me just say... people in those damn cell phones, there are a lot of unfortunate pictures of Mama dancing floating around.
No!
Yeah.
I know.
I don't really dance well, so I sort of just act slutty to music.
Yeah, you do. I've seen it.
Yeah. So here's the thing. You know, we all do something at the holiday party that then Monday you have to go,
you have to apologize for.
How is that going to affect my employment in this current environment?
Yes.
So let me just say the big boss's son... The big boss, the CEO guy of the Dow Global.
Really?
has a really, really cute son, 23 years old, from Chicago. So
Stephanie Louise Miller.
I didn't think I was getting a little too slutty with him in front of his parents, and I'm not sure how that's going to work out for me, having only been here, you know, a week or so. I may be magically disappeared back to L.A. or into a cornfield, alternatively.
Oh, no.
It's that thing where you have to review through the wine haze. You're sort of like, that wasn't good. Should I have done that? No, probably not.
Oh, no.
But, you know, he's just out of college or something, and, you know.
Yes.
You were like grad school.
You were like Mrs. Robinson.
He said, well, cuckoo-choo. Would you like to come to the dance floor? All right, so that was, and then, may I just say, Saturday night, Chicago was on fire. I say, not since Mrs. O'Leary's cow. Has there been such a hot night in Chicago, Chris?
Really?
Bill Press and I came out and did an event for our fine station there, WCPT, in Chicago, and we say thank you. Everybody came out. Sold out. It was a great time.
Awesome.
A lot of swearing. Bill Press does a lot of blow, as I think I've mentioned before.
Stephanie, he does not.
I spend a lot of time having, you know, like tell him that, you know, make a signal for his nose before he goes on stage. No, don't. What?
Oh. Anyway, I'm going to hear about that from Peter Ogburn.
Just tell him to go with the donut story if you can't get it off in time. Whatever, you know. Would you like to hear my big joke?
Sure.
From my big Tiger Woods joke, I wrote this on the plane. You know how I write it on the Chardonnay-soaked napkin, Chris.
Yes, you do.
They're always humdingers, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
I couldn't have been prouder of myself.
All right.
So, you know, the Tiger Woods thing, it just gets worse and worse, doesn't it, with more and more women? After a while, you're saying to yourself, is he playing 9 hoes or 18 hoes? Is he playing...
Was it the Daily News that said he's playing the back nine?
Yes. Anyway, and then Harvey Wells, our handsome and unbelievably well-endowed program director in Chicago.
Yes.
He, my flight was back a little early yesterday.
Uh-huh.
So he said, could you just take a cab? So he handed me cash in the hotel lobby.
Did he?
Which we both were a little... like, oh, this is what we're going to get pressed for now. We're both going to get arrested, and I'm going to have to explain. No. I'm a radio host. It's like a whore, but it's for a cab. No, sir, please don't.
Oh dear.
See, if whores had direct deposit, it would be a lot easier.
Yes,
exactly.
I've always said that.
So Max and Fred made the cover of the Chicago Tribune for their flight on Pet Airways with all the rescue dogs to New York, and then Mama would make the trip for being, a whore. So, there's always that. Program directors will do anything for station publicity, I find.
You've just now discovered that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I also, I think it's one of those things, you know, both Friday and Saturday night, Chris, kind of a haze.
Well, you were
kind
drunk all weekend.
Road. Kind of not. I think I have to go back and undo the damage of the weekend. I think I offered to have sex with everyone at the event because Harvey Wells told...
Hmm? Oh, no.
Well, because Harvey Wells told me on the way in that the ratings just came out and Mama is number one on the station in Chicago.
Awesome.
I love you, Chicago.
Yeah.
And he said that was a bit of a turnaround, Rude, from, Chris, you know this, the normal reaction. He had a lot of calls when the show first came on, like, what is it? I don't get it. Why are they so immature? Yeah. And then they always come around, don't they, Chris? They always, same story everywhere. They come around after a while.
Yeah, it grows on you like a fungus.
To our level.
It grows on you like a fungus.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're like that thing in the bathtub, Rude.
They're used to liberals just being so tight-assed about everything.
Yeah.
And angry.
Well, at first, they're
stick up
like,
the butt liberals.
Yeah. Right? And then you learn to love that soap scum.
So you're
kind of like,
you're
I don't mind
actually
it.
There to loosen their butts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are the official sphincter loosener of the progressive movement.
I think that's his bumper sticker.
Have Jim record that liner.
Yes, that's our slogan.
In, won't you?
Okay, I will.
We are the sphincter listener of the... Well, this is not easy, as you know, the show business. It is technically hard to come up with an idea, a concept that technically appeals to no one. Do you know what I mean? When we're sort of like we're too liberal for conservatives and too politically incorrect for liberals. So, theoretically, we appeal to absolutely nobody. And that's not an easy trick.
No, I was going to say, that's actually
a
triumph in and of itself.
It's a niche. All right, Tony in Chicago. Thanks from Chicago. Hey, Steph. I was wondering when I can get my Sex with Stephanie appointment. You promised sex with all of us after hearing of your number one ratings here on the station. By the way, thanks for wearing those jeans. Yeah, those were a little tight, Chris. Those were, Mama only packed like 2 pairs of jeans, and I was like, oh, these must have been from high school. Ooh,
oh.
I had to do the lay on the bed thing. Oh, God. It was a bit of a tourniquet.
But I bet your ass looks spectacular.
Why, thank you. Tony says, I'm a little concerned how thin and fit you are. In the Midwest, we like a little more fat on our sex symbols.
Here you are.
Thank you, Tony.
A little more jape.
You got to get beefed up.
I'm too
up.
Bony yeah, to be a Midwest.
You got to get beefed up for Tony.
You
need to be a little more Jane Mansfield and a little less Kate Moss, I guess.
Yes. Well, at least Rebecca still loves me, our
That's
surly
right.
associate producer. Rebecca!
Hi, Miss Miller. Hi.
How was your weekend with Mr. Taylor?
You know, I actually had a wedding party with his family. So
you
I,
did.
I hung
Who
out with a bunch
for
of
your
kids.
Wedding.
It's like a wildfire in your family.
Yes, we were hanging out with his family, and they're all super nice, super conservative. So oh, wow. I mentioned God quite a bit. And
Good.
Didn't swear
in what
at
sense?
All.
As an oh my?
No, it went well. So since well, he's Rebecca, listening, it went really, really well.
Hmm. Oh. That sounds kind of dirty.
Yeah, it does.
Rebecca, I think that, you know, you've got married recently, which is certainly a special moment in any girl's life. But, you know, it's going to be eclipsed now because someone gave you a montage.
That's right.
Mr. Oh! Ken in Cleveland.
I'm honored.
It's Rebecca's version, baby's first montage.
Wildly popular, surly associate producer Rebecca Baker. And what, or excuse me, Taylor.
Yes, how dare you.
Good morning, Rebecca.
What, bitch, what?
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, it's good to know you're still a dumb skank.
I said I'm going to be on the TV at midnight tonight. She goes, oh, an infomercial?
Are you going to do the Flowbee for that hair of yours?
What do I do when I need a quick haircut?
Use the Flowbee.
You know all that hate mail that you get? It's all me.
You've got mail.
Just different email accounts. I know what I'm doing.
I don't feel I get the respect I'm entitled to around here.
Shut up, Stephanie.
Because I am not one of your fans!
You, I don't like. I hate your ass face!
F you, dumb skank. Every day it's something new with you. You need more than just help. You need, like, a therapist.
Wow, somebody drank Mama's Carnation Instant Bitch this morning.
I just wanted to apologize for calling you a dumb skank. I didn't mean it, except for the part where I called you a dumb skank. Screw you.
Oh, you know that absence makes the heart grow fonder thing?
No.
Not so much.
Not so much. You know, no. I've been getting some people saying, like, oh, it's just shtick and she doesn't really hate her. No, mm-hmm. I really, really hate you.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, it's hard to fake it on air. That comes across. But for you, at least you have the courage of your convictions.
And there's a reason. I said I was going to tell you the reason, and you should know because...
This is your story arc already?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm just going to finish it so I can get back to work. No, here's the reason why I hate you. Mm-hmm. When you decided to go to New York, you didn't ask me. You didn't ask my permission. I'm your call screener. When do you not confide in a call screener?
I can't pry you away from Mr. Taylor. You probably have to spend half the day ironing his shirts and baking cookies for him. And what's wrong with you?
Ask Mr. Taylor. You left us.
She's really upset, Stephanie.
It's separation anxiety. That is so magical.
I quit you, bitch.
Right, thank you, Rebecca. Goodbye. Get back to the phones. Don't be surly to people on the phones instead of me for a moment. All right, 20 minutes after the hour, we are joined live in studio all 3 hours by Rude Pundit. What a party is that? We will dive into the issues of the day with him next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Wow, yes, yes, I love it.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Joined in studio by Rude Pundit, who is New York based and all. Rude, so you, because you do the Lord's work for the people, you went to see the Glenn Beck Christmas sweater show thing?
I did. It was, you know, think about the worst thing you've ever seen, then multiply it by 10, cover it in feces. bake it in an oven, and then beat your mother to death with it.
Oh, said it, only the rude pundit can say it. Here's the thing. Now that I'm in New York, I'm thinking, look, if this hump can do a live show, I'm going to do a live show. I could pick a different article of clothing. Maybe, Chris, I could do a show about sock, or maybe my right-wing death threat guy named Sock.
Ooh.
And
Sock.
I'd bring an orchestra.
That's Sock.
I think the Christmas thong would be quite popular.
He has a choir, Glenn Beck, right? I could bring the sock jingle singers.
He had a second-rate choir, because the first choir, apparently somebody told them that they were going to...
The Harlem choir.
Yeah, they were going to do something for Glenn Beck.
And yeah, they were like, oh, that ass hat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so we got this second-rate black choir. Apparently for Glenn Beck, the only people that can actually sing are black people.
Oh.
Because
it was the Jamaican bobsled team choir.
Oh, it was.
Not exactly the Harlem choir.
You know, God bless them. They were really putting their heart and soul into it. And in the actual, because what the show was Glenn Beck introduced the video of the Christmas sweater. Then he played the video of the Christmas sweater for... three quarters of the whole thing.
Good Lord.
What's the video? I'm confused. Oh,
well,
something he's previously recorded.
Oh, you don't know?
I don't know. You know, Chris, I thought for show purposes, should I go? And I was like, I can't. But I will vomit.
I don't even know how anybody got to the actual live thing. I mean, there are Glenn Beck fans that were trying to get to it. He was doing it at an NYU auditorium. And there were, I don't know, it looked like there were 100 people there invited.
Yes.
Goobers.
What does a Glenn Beck fan look like?
A Walmart shopper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
that people of Walmart thing everyone sends around on the internet.
Exactly. So the Christmas sweater is a story that Beck wrote that he created out of elements of his life.
Yes, a story of redemption.
Yeah, in other words, it's a big friggin' fiction book.
Yes.
Because, you know...
he used to be a drunken asshat, and now he's a sober asshat.
Right, but it's not about his drunken asshattery.
Oh.
That would have been a charming book, you know, Glenn Beck in a pool of vomit, you know, doing drunken poetry and dancing and hitting on 23-year-olds. But that would have... That would have been charming compared to what the Christmas sweater story is, which is about a 12-year-old boy whose mom knits him a sweater, and he doesn't like the sweater because he wanted a bike.
Oh.
And so then his dad's already dead, and then on his way back from his grandparents' house, they get into a head-on collision, mom dies.
Oh, my God.
Is this a true story? Oh, yeah.
No, it's not a true story, and that's the thing that makes Glenn Beck a... Oh, what's a non-dirty way I can put this? A bag of douche.
A bag of douche.
A bag of douche.
Yes.
And he is it's because his parents actually divorced. And
I heard about
and
this.
And his mom.
So much like his work on Fox News, a little light on facts.
Right. Well, the thing is, he never says the story's true. He says elements of the story are true. And so he...
That is asshattery at its finest, if you ask me, and manipulative asshattery.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the writing is so wonderful.
When I come back, I'm also going to tell a story that's not true.
Okay. It'll
make you cry.
Cool.
Okay, on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
No. You're too young to be a witch. Savor the steps leading up to it. College anorexic, career disappointments, failed pottery shop. And then, when you're old and alone, you can hit the witch thing hard.
I'm already old and alone.
Yeah.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. I'm old and alone, but I'll be on the Ed Schultz Show on MSNBC this Friday. Tune in for that, 33 minutes after the hour. Oh, I saw him at the holiday party, Chris, Friday night.
Yeah.
And segments of my weekend, Lee, are starting to come back to me, you know, in those little bits and pieces, like little flapping wires connect, and then you go, oh. And, Chris, as I recall, we were kicking it, as they say, old school.
Oh, you were?
On the dance floor.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We were, I remember this one. We were dancing a lot to this one, to the OPPs, the You Know Me.
Ah, wow.
A lot of white people screaming, yeah, you know me.
Hell yeah.
Oh, Steph.
Yeah, there exist pictures of mummy dad.
It's going to be like those Katie Couric pictures that just came out.
Yes. Have you seen those, Steph?
What Katie Couric pictures? No.
Oh, yeah.
I've been busy this weekend. What happened?
Pictures of her dancing at a celebration for when she got the new gig at
yes,
CBS.
Yes, the news, yes.
Oh, and she,
not she's backing that ass up.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. You know, that's not dissimilar to Walter Cronkite. I believe there's pictures of him.
Yes. And
when he got the... Baby got back.
I mean, yeah, Chet Huntley never got over it.
Yeah, and I thought that was before the Lombada, but I guess not. Those pictures are, Walter, very embarrassing.
No, that's when you used to be able to go to Cuba, so it was really sexy.
So he was doing the forbidden dance all the time.
We'll have to have Jim Ward talk about whether Tom Brokaw did the electric slide or the
He did the electric slide on that expressway.
The electric skid.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what happened over the weekend? Yikes.
He was involved in a... he was involved in a fatal accident. He was unharmed, but someone died.
And his
died.
Wife. They were both unharmed.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's a murderer? Or is that what's...
Terrible. On the Bruckner Expressway. See, Chris, that was in Bonfire of the Vanities, too.
All right. See? You're the only person that ever saw that movie, Stephanie.
No, a lot of people did. You know what I'm talking about. We almost had to go to the Bronx to pick up my FedEx package. You know how that ends for your Tom Hanks.
Nobody's ever seen that movie.
I've never seen that movie.
Okay, all right.
It was a big flop. It's famous for being a flop.
Listen, I mostly just reference the entity, the Barbara Hershey movie, where she gets raped by a sound effect.
Which
one saw that.
You
either.
Know what's sad? I've seen that movie.
Yes!
See?
They used to show that on, like, HBO every day back in the 80s.
She was raped by an entity.
Yes, just to watch her breasts magically move on their own. Yes. They're getting fondled.
Everybody's
seen
that.
I'm also obsessed with Nell. Jacoby!
Oh, yeah.
Didn't she get nominated? Did she win an Oscar?
She was nominated.
Like, you're going, how can you tell it's good acting?
Have you seen any movie in the last 10 years? Because all of these movies are at least 10 or 15 years old.
No, I don't. I don't get out much.
I guess not.
But now that I'm in New York, I will.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go see a talkie now that I'm here.
Yeah, there's no movies in L.A.
All right. If I want entertainment, Chris, I can go see Glenn Beck's friggin' Christmas jockstrap or whatever.
Yeah.
What's the thing you like to see?
It's a sweater. It's a friggin' sweater. His mom made him a sweater out of tears and welfare money. It was.
It really does not say that, does it?
No.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh jeez. Oh.
No, it's
wow, I mean, that is just so ridiculously manipulative that the story is not.
No,
really,
wait, it gets worse.
Quite true.
No, it gets worse. Well, first of all, he performs.
That's worse
it.
Than the E.T. E.T.'s dead. No, no, he's not.
Yeah, no, it's. It, oh, wait. There's the resurrection too. First of all, he's reading a teleprompter through the whole performance. So I believe that ought to be pointed out to all the Obama teleprompter haters.
Yeah, exactly.
That if you're actually speaking for an extended period of time and you don't bother to memorize your lines, that you need that. And let's see, at one point he's playing a 12-year-old boy through most of it. And at one point he ends up in a cornfield, which is projected behind him, fetal on the floor, sobbing his guts out, rolling around. I mean, you just wanted to walk up to him and, kick him in the crotch and shoot him in the head and just put him out of his misery. And
Rude.
And so after he's... Yeah, there we go.
The Stephanie Miller Show does not encourage...
No, it's rhetorical shooting him in the head.
The Stephanie Miller Show apologizes for the existence of Rude Pundit, which we had nothing to do with, although we love him.
Thank you. Just to sort of wrap this up without it getting even longer than the actual Christmas sweater, the end of it is he's redeemed, he sees Jesus, he goes through a storm, and this old man that turns out to be Jesus, I'm really not making this up, he goes through a storm in the middle of a cornfield, and he's redeemed, and then he wakes up, and the whole thing was a dream, and his mom is alive, and he loves the sweater. So, wait, the second part of the show was people on stage whose lives have been changed by the Christmas sweater story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he brings out this guy who was a drug addict who started doing heroin on 9/11 because, you really want to amp up your drugs when 9/11 happens.
Yes.
And a woman with breast cancer who only made it through because somebody, gave her the Christmas sweater book.
No.
And, yeah, oh, yeah.
It cured her?
No, it didn't cure her, but it gave her the strength. It made her happy that she had had cancer.
Yes, an oncologist might have a different point of view on it.
And a guy.
Might help in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a guy. No, she went through treatment and everything.
Oh, okay.
All right. But then a guy who was walking into a pharmacy to buy sleeping pills to kill himself, who heard Glenn Beck's voice, fell on the ground crying, much like Glenn Beck did.
Oh, the soothing tones of Glenn Beck.
Yes. And
oh, did he call him on the phone? Because I can imagine how that would really...
And the whole thing ended.
Yeah, I can see how that would bring you back from the brink.
Yeah. And then the whole thing ended with him uncomfortably, repeatedly hugging all of the people while the really bad black choir kept singing. And I'm pointing out they're black. Oh. Well, because during the actual Christmas sweater, this large black woman kept walking out every now and then in the middle when he was sobbing to sing something.
Oh.
And it was literally the only people singing, and the only non-white people there were the hired help.
This sounds like Mommy Dearest or Xanadu of, you know...
Rude Pundit, you are a fine American. Oh, we thank you for, because you're right. I could not endure it.
It was like I was Barbara Hershey and Frank Capra was the entity.
Yeah.
Oh! Okay. Chris, you'd think she could hear the sound effect coming and she would know to get out.
But alas, right. No.
What is that? Oh no! Okay, I'm just saying. All right, you know,
I love the idea that at Netflix, all of a sudden, this starts getting rented.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Flies off the shelves every time we talk about it. Okay, so here's the other slightly less ridiculous Christmas story, right-wing Christmas story. Chris, could I have my Charlie Brown music? A suburban Memphis mayor said Obama deliberately timed his speech to preempt the Christian message of a Charlie Brown Christmas. The, you know, this is apparently the night of the Christmas special.
Yeah.
In the opinion of Arlington Mayor, is there no end to the right-wing asshattery these days? No. In the opinion of Arlington Mayor Russell Wiseman, President Obama's speech on Tuesday night on the war in Afghanistan was deliberately timed to block the Christian message of the Peanuts television Christmas special. Wiseman made the statements on his Facebook page where... apparently people think they're invisible or something, where he declared Obama to be a Muslim. He wrote, okay, so this is total crap. We sit the kids down to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special and our Muslim president's there. What a load.
What?
Trying to convince me that wasn't done on purpose.
He said that in a public forum?
Yes, uh-huh. He said, he also wrote in another place on his Facebook, you Obama people need to move to a Muslim country. Oh, wait, that's America. Pitiful.
Oh.
You know... our forefathers had it written in the original Constitution that only property owners could vote. Oh, boy. If that had stayed in there, things would be different. When contacted Thursday, Wiseman declined to comment. He said, it's ridiculous for someone to send my Facebook post. You guys are trying to make a mountain out of a molehill.
But why is a guy named Wiseman setting his kids down to watch a Charlie Brown Christmas?
Just curious.
Yeah.
Is that? I mean, seriously, what? How dare you? Okay, I posted it online. How dare you draw attention to it?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
And that's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Apparently.
Yes, accusing people of
being... is a
Muslim
president stealing your children's Christmas with his Muslim speech.
I love that Muslim is now an insult.
You know what? I'm just proud of him for not using the word Muslin.
Yeah, like some I want to do. All right. By the way, speaking of Afghanistan, there was a long-ass piece in the New York Times, I don't know if you read it, about the how the president arrived at his strategy. And I've got some surprising things to say. I'm sure Rude Pundit does, too. I know we're all over the place on Afghanistan. We will talk about all that as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Facts with Slag Whistle. It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Just like you and me,
it is the Stephanie Miller Show. If I played that long enough, it might cause me to purchase tickets to the Glenn Beck Christmas show.
Hypnotizing.
We'll get on a rooftop of some sort. All right. 48 minutes after the hour, joined live in studio by Rude Pundit Lee Papa. By the way, what happened to his jingle, for God's sakes? We gave Rebecca a month.
Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit. Pundit.
All right, now you're really here.
Thank you.
1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere to join the party. So, Rude, I don't know where you stand. I'm guessing, I know I've read some of your stuff at Afghanistan. You think the president's made the wrong decision?
Sure.
I suspected.
But I knew he was going to make that decision because I paid attention during the campaign.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying Saturday night in Chicago. I was saying, to me, this is not a surprise. He always said we got distracted in Iraq. We didn't finish the job in Afghanistan. They didn't get the resources or the right strategy. I'm going to finish the job. So this is, why do you think the left is so like, what?
Well, because we don't have.
I don't think he ever said I'm going to get out of Afghanistan
immediately. No, he said he was going to put in at least two brigades, which he did immediately when he got into office.
Right, that was the request. Yeah,
right, and now he's escalating even further. Why is the left upset? Because we're in our at a snail-like pace. We're leaving Iraq, so that's not the big distraction it was, and now we can focus on Afghanistan. And it's for so long to us, it was the good war. It was the war that we could show. Yeah, we're bloodthirsty too, and now that we don't have that other war to distract us, we are focusing on Afghanistan. I think the rest of the nation's like that too.
Well, you know, I was saying this has been a tough one for me as a liberal, but also not a fan of war, as someone with a vagina, not a fan of the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are just so many issues. And you know, even Frank Rich, who I think is not, I was reading his piece this weekend, you know, not for the escalation either. But, you know, he said what I think Jim Warden and I were talking about, that I think clearly, first of all, he's not doing the political thing. Because the country is not really for this war.
Right.
So you can't go, oh, this was, I think Frank Rich was making the point that this isn't one of those, oh, up the middle kind of whatever. I mean, if you read this huge New York Times piece about how he arrived at the strategy, and at least we have a really smart president that is really thinking this through and is really asking all the right questions, and it's not, I mean, you heard the story of George Bush. Somebody, I can't remember who's in the room, Chris, remember? And Bush just pops his head and goes, we're taking Saddam out.
yeah.
Like I'm laughing, then slam, and then close the door. And that was pretty much the deliberation on the whole.
Isn't that the way you want, though, somebody leading you to war?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like Ruth Buzzy.
Yeah. Exactly. Artie Johnson.
Exactly.
Wow, we're old.
Joanne Worley.
we're gonna sock it to Saddam. Like, yeah. That's what you want. but I urge you, if you can, where is the piece? Look, Chris, I have the actual whole paper now that I live in New York. Look, listen to this. This is the New York Times. This is
wow.
Nice. Uh-huh.
So it sounds liberal.
Yeah, so it doesn't just exist online, huh?
Anyway, the headline is, Inside the Situation Room, How a War Plan Evolved. Advisors detail Obama's decisive moment in the tense decision on Afghanistan. Mm. You know, I understand, and obviously the liberals that I really respect, like Frank Rich, said I respect the president's decision and his process. I think it's wrong, you know. But I got to say, I mean, I think I'm of the giving the president the benefit of the doubt camp. But I got to say, when I read this article, Lee, this guy's not only smart, I'm reading it and I'm going, you know, this just might work. I mean, I understand that, and none of us have a crystal ball. Like, you don't know whether it's going to work or not, and I understand, you know, the arguments against it completely, but I'm kind of going, wow, this guy really, you know, got a lot of advice from a lot of people, really thought it through, really kept asking the same questions. There's this one part I was reading at one point in the process. It said, still for the first time, Obama made it clear he was ready to send more troops if a strategy could be found to ensure that it was not an endless war. He indicated the Taliban had to be beaten back. What do we need to break their momentum, he asked. 4 days later at a meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he emphasized the need for speed. Why can't I get the troops in faster, he asked. If they were going to do this, he concluded, it only made sense to do this quickly to have impact and keep the war from dragging on forever. This is America's war. I don't want to make an open-ended commitment. So that's the part. Obviously, the right wing doesn't like about the plan that I do like.
Mm-hmm.
That he wants to escalate quickly and get out quickly. And they're saying it's risky, but it might work.
But it's not what's going to happen.
Okay. Well, okay. Then you
have a crystal ball. I do have. Well, but I also yesterday on the one of the talks were a couple of the Sunday morning talk shows.
Right.
Both Hillary Clinton and Secretary Gates said, "Yeah, we are going to start taking some troops out in 2011, but there is no exit strategy."
I understand, but what I'm saying, Lee, is I feel like he inherited this giant mess again from the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. It looked at this really thorny problem that clearly, according to the Senate report, was completely screwed up. At the time, I mean, yes, there's only 100 al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but clearly we all understand the problem with Pakistan and Afghanistan now. So, I mean, I think that he wants to get out, but I think this is what he's trying. This is a strategy.
He wants to give it.
It's almost like trying to go back in time.
Right.
It's like getting in the DeLorean and going back to try to finish the job that the Bush administration didn't. It's like, that's what he's saying. I want to get them in outer, faster and out faster.
He wants one last shot to try to make it work. And that,
yes, to finally give them the resources and the strategy that they didn't have because we got distracted in the unnecessary and illegal war in Iraq.
Right. But the problem is that it ain't 8 years ago.
And the other thing is that I
would be behind him a lot more strongly if he wasn't backing off of so many of the other things that he had said in the campaign. I mean, his campaign platform was public option. And now we hear that he's getting out of the, he came out of this meeting with senators without even discussing a public option.
He didn't knock any heads together. He didn't hit Joe Lieberman with a bag of flour.
No, I was hoping
that he would.
No, in fact, Lieberman came out very encouraged.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, I feel like those of us that voted for him thinking, all right, we'll go along with you on Afghanistan because we know we're getting all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And now we're not getting the other stuff.
Well, you know, Bill Press, who I did this event with Saturday night, he said very clearly he still thinks we are getting health care reform with a public option, with a strong public option. And I mentioned, I think he does do a lot of blow. However, he seems to, you know, he goes to the White House three times a week. Chris, he knows something about something.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So I'm just saying, let's give it a second. There are a lot of people that still think we are getting health care. And believe me, I'm started from single payer, too. But, I would rather get something that, like Medicare or civil rights or whatever, can be strengthened over time. I mean, than nothing. Than having people still get discriminated against for pre-existing conditions and whatever. So.
Right, but if there's no safeguard in there against the insurance companies jacking prices up because, they're not discriminating anymore, they're just going to discriminate price-wise, then the whole thing falls apart. Then there is no real reform. There's just greater profit for the health insurance companies.
No, I mean, I agree. That's the thing that, in terms of herding all these people into the private insurance industry and not, having there be any safeguards. I agree, but I think that's not done yet is my only point. Maybe I'm a little too optimistic. You're a little, you need to turn that frown upside down, mister.
Maybe you're just the yang to my yin.
That could be.
That is so magic.
I don't even think I got that right, but
I'm just saying, read the New York Times article. You know, Chris, I don't normally give homework. Only Randy Rhodes does. I'm like the fill-in teacher that you throw spitballs at and ignore. No one would take me seriously anyway if I gave them homework.
My class once made a substitute teacher quit, right on the spot. She walked out and left.
Good for you. Good job.
Thank you.
All right. Anyway, all I'm saying is read the New York Times story, Inside the Situation Room, How a War Plan Evolved, from the New York Times yesterday, and put yourself in his position. What would you do? What would you do?
All right, Dennis Hopper. We'll figure it out.
See, he's just, extra cranky. We're settling into a marriage here in New York. All right. 57 minutes after the hour. Thank you, Rude Pundit. We will see you next Monday, as usual. Media Matters coming up for Right Wing World as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2. The phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. Mama did it. Mama blackberried those pictures to producer Chris from Max and Fred's trip on Pet Airways
to
New York.
Now, did all of them make it? Because
I don't know. I haven't looked at the StephanieMiller.com yet.
Oh, jeez.
But you got pictures of Max and Fred's trip on Pet Airways, right?
Yes, there were 8 pictures that I added yesterday.
Look at Mommy's doggies.
Max!
Jim, you have to go look, because Max is bigger than the plane in one picture.
What kind of plane was it?
You know what? I bet you'd be able to tell because you're a planey. So go online and look at StephanieMiller.com.
Yeah, in the gallery section, just go to the Steph's Dogs section of the gallery section.
Oh, and is the picture of me and my new boyfriend up yet?
I don't know what that was. Yes, it is up.
As it turned out, I did have a man waiting for me in New York.
Oh.
I thought you were talking about the zygote.
Me sitting on a
Chicago
park bench. No, this is what a loser I am, Jim. I passed it's a bronze statue of a guy sitting on a park bench, and I thought it'd be a funny picture. So
she's sitting on a park bench.
I took a picture of myself because I'm under one.
That's the first time anyone's ever done that.
He's such a tourist. Oh, my God.
StephanieMiller.com is the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoie, voice deity Jim Ward, certainly associate producer Rebecca Baker, or me. Oh, like Julie did, Jim, to give us a heads up on the Afghanistan strategy. Remember the Bush administration?
Yeah.
They had all those disastrous military adventures that were all named really macho names. Like, you remember Operation
Commando Eagle. It's an eagle without underpants.
Yeah, that was an actual name, Operation Commando Eagle.
I don't think I've ever seen an eagle with underpants.
I don't.
As I mentioned, Jim, if you read the New York Times piece, at least this is, I think, a smart and well-thought-out strategy. Whether it'll work, I don't know. But the Bush administrations were pretty much just the macho with none of the actual, thinking. But Julie
thinking is French
staff,
and gay.
Exactly. She sent the breaking news story about the name of the U.S. Marines and Afghan troops have launched the first offensive since Barack Obama announced an American troop surge. A U.S. military spokesman said about 1,000 Marines as well as Afghan troops launched Operation Cobra's Anger.
It's a really angry snake. And I just mean snake. I'm not talking about anything else. Nothing metaphorical. Get your mind out of the gutter.
It's Operation Cobra's Anger. Wow. Okay. We didn't think of that before. We didn't think of the pissed off snake. Huh? That'll show him.
You didn't get the
just,
sexual
just the naked
I
eagle.
I did. Yeah. I got it all.
Okay. We only thought of naked eagles. Sorry.
All right. Hey, let's dive into the right wing world, shall we, kids? Oh, my lovely and talented co-host, Eric Bollard, senior fellow at Media Matters with us. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. So, what's your take on the president's speech?
Which one?
Which one? Oh, I meant I'm going back to the Afghanistan one.
From last week.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't Churchillian enough.
Meaning?
That was the right-wing critique. It wasn't the Gettysburg dress plus Winston Churchill plus fill in the blank. He didn't
They were
history.
Saying he didn't seem happy enough.
Well, he didn't seem happy enough, and he didn't declare victory at all costs. And he didn't, I don't know what he didn't do, but as David Frum over the weekend said on CNN, conservatives are just sort of incapable of praising Obama. I mean, here he was essentially completely matching their policy. He did pretty much exactly what a lot of conservatives and Republicans wanted to do.
Not enough bloodlust,
and it was boring.
No happy dance.
All the theater criticism stuff again. But he didn't morph into Winston Churchill.
I see. All right. Yes. So, Sean Hannity, I don't know about you, but I couldn't be happier about this whole teabagger movement and the way it's turned out politically thus far for them in upstate New York. Here's Hannity, because DNC Chair Tim Kaine was talking about how it's hurting the Republicans.
DNC Chair Tim Kaine is predicting big victories for the Democrats in 2010, but you won't believe why. He somehow thinks that the Tea Party movement was a big fight between warring factions of the Republican camp. Pay earth to Tim Kaine. The Tea Parties have energized the GOP and the country with an energy it has not seen in years. And unfortunately, Mr. Kaine, they've also united a whole lot of people against your Democrats.
Well, they've united the right-wing, wacko, lunatic fringe of the Republican Party.
against the moderate, or the few moderate elements of the Republican Party, right, Eric?
Well, yeah, and as you mentioned, I mean, New York 23, I mean, that just doesn't exist on Fox News anymore. I mean, that was without, you know, if you go up to the run-up to that election, that was without a doubt the coming-out party for the Tea Party. That was the sort of the confirmation of a national movement. That was everything that Tea Party wanted to do, was launch its own campaign. It was the Glenn Beck campaign candidate. It was the Michelle Malkin candidate. It was the Rush Limbaugh candidate. And they managed to turn, you know, they managed to send the first Democrat to Congress from that district in 150 years. So that's probably not the best blueprint. And I'm pretty sure Rasmussen is by far my least favorite pollster on the planet. Yeah. But he has a poll that's saying more people identify themselves as the Tea Party than Republicans, I think, today.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a definite downside to all of this. You know, the Republican Party loved the unhinged hatred of Obama, but now we see a scenario where it might do damage. I mean, Glenn Beck is talking about, you know, third-party candidates. They can't control this hate machine they created, and there's a pretty good chance it's gonna roll right over them.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, what you see is it's a lot of noise and heat, Eric, and stupidity. But
yeah,
in terms of results, look at New York 23. Look at health care. I mean, health care is going to get passed. It's a lot of morons yelling, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's no precedent in American politics for that kind of incoherent just hate getting people elected to office. I mean, you know, look who won in look who won in November for the Republican Party in Virginia and New Jersey. Classic establishment Republican parties didn't want Sarah Palin around, didn't talk about the Tea Parties. I mean, these were candidates that could have run right out of the 1980s, 1990s model, wanted nothing to do with the right-wing media, and they won handily. And the one candidate who embraced, you know, sort of the Beck Nation, you know, again, made history for all the wrong reasons in upstate New York. So you're right. It is a lot of yelling and shouting, and they create a lot of attention. They draw a lot of attention to themselves. But there's no blueprint for electing people in that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, meanwhile, Sarah Palin, of course, came out as a birther and then tried to take that back.
Yeah.
She tried to whole can of worms.
She tried to abort the birtherdomness.
Well, it was just... This is what happens when you refuse to talk to the press. I mean, the only people she'll talk to are sort of the sycophants on the right, you know, these right-wing talkers and bloggers and, you know, National Review. And she has not spoken to a single reporter since this book launch.
And
if you go back to the 2008 campaign, she never once, I mean, she had interviews with sort of the celebrity anchors. She never once had a press conference or talked to any political journalist. So she doesn't, she has no contact with the political press. So now all she does is make these, you know, these declarations on Facebook, or in this case with the birther stuff on the right-wing radio, and then she has to sort of try to stick the toothpaste back in the tube. And
yep.
So, yeah, she introduced the whole birther thing, and then she said, well, it's all because of my kid, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Eric, you make it sound like Rusty Humphries is not an esteemed journalist.
Sarah Palin here on the Rusty Humphries Show. One of the questions Jason asks is, would you make the birth certificate an issue if you ran?
I think the public rightfully is still making it an issue. I don't have a problem with that. I don't know if I would have to bother to make it an issue, because I think enough members of the electorate still want answers.
Do you think it's a fair question to be looking at?
I think it's a fair question, just like I think past associations and past voting records, all of that is fair game.
Yeah, rightfully. The American people are rightfully making it an issue, is what she said.
Right, well, Lou Dobbs certainly
tried
to make it an issue. Didn't work out so well for him.
No.
But that is a clear, you know, that is a clear endorsement of the birther thing. You can't say the birther, you know, nonsense is a legitimate question and then claim you're not backing it. I mean, I was reading some of National Review last week. Well, she's not a birther. You know, you can't come out and say this nonsense is fair game, and then on the other hand, pretty saying, well, I'm not really backing up the birther stuff. It's total nonsense. And then on her Facebook page, she tried to tie it into the controversy over her son Trigg, and she had to answer uncomfortable questions about that. So therefore, it's okay for her to suggest, you know, it was a mess.
Well, I mean, interesting
it
that she brings
to this notion that, you know, she doesn't have any handlers or she's not listening to them, and the whole thing is sort of a media car wreck.
Right. I mean, and Eric, the funny thing is, you know, the president's birth, that's not an opinion or not.
That's right.
I mean, there is an official document, whereas the funny thing is, I don't know if you saw this, but the breaking news is Andrew Sullivan. So, well, now that you've brought it up again.
Oh, God.
He said, one of her most tireless critics, Andrew Sullivan, reasserting his request for the birth records of her son, Trigg. Sullivan has long questioned whether or not biological mother.
Oh.
He said the news here is, to her credit, Palin says all inquiries into a candidate's veracity, record, associations, and medical history are legitimate forms of inquiry. She therefore backs this blog's near solitary attempt to get her to provide evidence after very serious questions of fact emerged that she was indeed the biological mother of Trigg, I'm just saying, more than one person has said that. I mean, I keep wondering if that's what Levi Johnson's talking about, that he knows.
Oh, maybe. But honestly, who? I just wish that whole story would just go away. And but she did, in our Facebook posting, did state as fact that she had released, Trigg's birth certificate. Andrew Sullivan, who would know much better than I, claims that's not true, and he's going after that angle. But this is what happens when you dip your toe in the birther
movement.
All sorts of bad things happen, and all sorts of nonsense gets dug up again, and nothing good comes of trying to befriend the birthers.
That's right.
Yep. All right, Fred Barnes on the Brit Bear. As you know, numbers and facts tend to have a liberal bias.
Obama thinks it's his stimulus package. There's no reason to believe that. I say never underestimate the resilience of the American economy. It's an amazing and dynamic organism, the way it rebounds from the worst of circumstances.
Oh, so it does it by itself.
Yeah. It's just magic,
Jim.
Obama
has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's like sea monkeys.
This is very interesting because Friday, of course, the job numbers were shocking. People, experts were claiming, you know, we're going to lose 140, 150, 170. The economy lost 11,000, and it really did spotlight for the real bind the conservative movement's in, and that they cheerlead bad news. I mean, they want 14%.
No, exactly.
Unemployment. They want red lines. They want this sort of apocalyptic view of America. And then when it doesn't happen,
Eric, unfortunately, the nonpartisan CBO is backing this up, that, you know, that the stimulus is working, that it saved or created, 1.6 million jobs or something. They're not, on one side or the other. They're looking at numbers.
That's right. That's right. And it completely undercuts the right-wing claim that, not one job has been created, et cetera, et cetera. But it's certainly interesting. The projections I've seen is we're going to see job gains by March. And if you just look at the politics, that is a nightmare for the Republican Party next year. If next spring, summer, and fall, we're adding tens of thousands of new jobs. So, they have to cheer for bad news, and they have to pretend when there is good news that it was all some sort of witchcraft, as Fred Barnes.
Yes, exactly. Well, the stimulus has created one job, and that is a job for you in the next segment of the Stephanie Miller Show. Can you stay tuned, Eric?
Fair enough.
All right. Eric Boldert, stay tuned in the sidecar for Right Wing World as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's all about fun. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Coming up in just a few minutes, Betsy Reed, co-editor of Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare. Hilarious book. You can pick it up at stephaniemiller.com. Click on the banner ad. Eric Boldert still in the sidecar on for Media Matters for Right Wing World. So, Eric, Jeff Birnbaum on the Brit Bear Show on the Afghanistan situation.
I think the Democrats are going to be increasingly upset with the president's Afghanistan buildup because that pullout date in the middle of 2011 looks to be flimsier and flimsier from their point of view. The president's going to have a real revolt on his hands among Democrats.
Well, for one, something in right-wing world, true probably, right, Eric?
In terms of the reaction?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, the left is split, I think, on Afghanistan.
Oh, there's no doubt, yeah. I mean, the administration continues to track to the middle on lots of things, including healthcare and Afghanistan. But it's interesting. I mean, the press certainly doesn't portray Obama as a moderate, and certainly the folks on Fox News never treat him as a moderate.
Yeah, we always hope for the radical socialist they say he is.
I don't think that's going to actually materialize, no matter how many times they say it's true. So I don't know about a revolt and a flimsy date and things like that. But yeah, I mean, there's clearly opposition and from the liberal wing of the party, just like there's opposition, growing opposition in terms of where healthcare legislation is going. Mm-hmm. Apparently Obama did not mention the public option in his speech to senators yesterday. So there's nothing wrong with highlighting the split, but it's interesting. Even though Obama is upsetting the left, he's never portrayed as a moderate, and he's certainly never portrayed as sort of triangulating like Clinton did. He continues to be portrayed by the right wing press, particularly as this sort of left wing radical.
Well, I don't know if you happened to read Frank Rich yesterday, but I was saying that, one thing you got to give the credit, the president credit for, this was not a political calculated, I don't think, up the middle decision. I mean, if you really read what he went through, I mean, I think he really, really tried to make a reasoned, good decision that he thinks will work in Afghanistan, whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah, and what's interesting is we might have talked about this last week, but during the Clinton years, it was always the press attack on Clinton was he just followed the polls, no matter what he did, we never really knew what Bill Clinton stood for because all he did he had his finger to the wind and he did what was ever popular, and the press really attacked him for that. Well, here's clearly a case in terms of the Afghanistan policy, not popular if you look at sort of the generic polling. And so what does the press do? Obama never gets any credit for doing what's unpopular and yep. making a stand. He gets attacked for being out of step with the American people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real double standard there.
Mm-hmm. Eric, do you find it odd how Bill O'Reilly seems to have a weird sympathy for men caught in sex scandals publicly, which might be embarrassing?
Woods has earned $1 billion with a B in golf fees. I mean, the guy's a phenom, obviously. And people hear about this kind of stuff almost every week now. I mean, another famous person is caught in some kind of a painful situation. Some of it's fair, some of it isn't fair.
Ah, some of it isn't fair, huh?
And by fair, he means when women open their big yaps and talk about forced phone sex and things of that nature and payoffs.
And Middle Eastern foods.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if when O'Reilly talked about these things, he at least acknowledged or talked about his own past and his own lawsuits and his own problems along these natures. But it's sort of the elephant in the room, and so I don't know if people, his viewers all know that, and they, it would just sort of be awkward for him to talk about it, or if he just is trying to sweep it all under the rug. But
hope we forgot.
He certainly has a perspective here. That,
Eric Bollard. From Media Matters for America. Thank you, sir.
Sure thing. Talk to you.
The editor of Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, and American Nightmare, next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Now with less violence, but more kinky sex and nudity for a cleaner and saner America.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. The Dow is up 38 points. It is 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Oh, this calls for the guys and gals dance mix, doesn't it? Guys and gals.
Guys and gals.
Guys.
Gals.
There's not much that can make Sarah Palin still entertaining, because most of us wish she would just go away. However, there is a hilarious new book out called Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare. We have Betsy Reed, the co-editor, on the phone with us. Hey, Betsy, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I love this book. Love it, and I love that it's making the right wing's head explode, because people are confusing it with her actual book.
It's true. I mean, they're doing it, really in the media, much more so than we even anticipated when we put it out there. We were having a little bit of fun with her cover, because our cover looks a bit similar. It has a similar image of her, but we have a very dark, stormy background, and our subtitle is
The Gathering
American Nightmare.
Yeah, right. I love the gathering storm behind her, yes.
Right. But, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, Fox News actually put our cover up when they were intending to talk about Sarah Palin's book, and then the woman had to apologize. She looked like she had just swallowed something really unpleasant.
That's the thing. She's just so ubiquitous that you can't get away from her. And you thank God for your book, because it makes it, because you can't get away from her. She's a phenomenon, whether you love her or hate her, right?
It's true. I mean, it really does seem like Americans either love her or hate her, which has been, frankly, a good thing for our book, because it is a sort of antidote to going rogue. It's true that Richard and I, my co-editor of the book, wrote a piece recently about how neither the left nor the right can get enough of Sarah Palin. That's a sort of paradox of her, you know?
There's another category, people who hate her but still want to do her.
Oh, Jim, stop
Jim
it.
Jim representing that category.
Oh.
Betsy, this is edited by, obviously, you guys are both from The Nation. Wow, what a lineup of contributors. You've got Joe Connison, Eve Ensler, Naomi Klein, Robert Reich, Frank Rich, Katrina Vandenhoeven, Matt Taibbi. I mean, you got an all-star cast there contributing to this.
Yeah, and I think, actually it's pretty fun to read, too. It was really a fun project putting it together, because I realized, we really have a terrific resource on the left of just all of the great writers that are out there who have taken her apart. And, there are a lot of great feminists like Katha Pollitt and Hannah Rosin who have really smart takes on her. So I hope people enjoy the book.
Well, it's an interesting, clearly there's a comedic slant to it, but, you talk about her quirky origins in Alaska, her rise to the effective leadership of the Republican Party, and the nightmarish prospect of her continuing to dominate the nation's political scene. I mean, there is a part of it, like, great for comedy, but really the horror of, oh, my God, could she really be president?
Right. I mean, we actually take her fairly seriously in the book. In a way, the funniest parts are actually her own words. We have a section called Palinology that has all of the bloopers collected from the campaign. And we reprinted her resignation speech from Alaska. And, we put her top 25 tweets together. And, but I think it's – and we also looked at all the statements that she's made, and we compared the fictions to the facts. And how basically, she's constantly distorting things. And even when she is purportedly sort of admitting that she's made a mistake, she ends up distorting things all over again. I mean, you saw that when she just recently, did you hear how she was talking to this right-wing radio host and said that she thought the birthers had a legitimate question about Barack Obama's birth certificate?
We just played the clip a few minutes ago in Right Wing World. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that. But, yeah. And then when she gets on to talk about, she went on her Facebook page to ostensibly sort of take it back, because there was such an outcry after she made that statement. But even when she was ostensibly taking it back, she didn't make any sense. She started to talk about how she compared it to people asking about Trigg and whether Trigg was really her son. But actually, she is so outraged about that in her own book. She doesn't actually think that's a legitimate question. I mean, she's right to actually make that comparison, but she doesn't make any sense, really. And so it's very important to kind of really take her words and set them against the record.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. It's like the Katie Couric interview. I mean, we can't write anything that's funnier than, when I remember watching the resignation speech on TV, and it literally, between Tina Fey, it literally became like, is this a sketch or is this real?
No, I know.
That speech just went on and on.
Dead fish go with the flow.
Yeah.
No, it was just a series of non sequiturs. You're like, I think she's quitting, but why? Like, you just didn't.
I know. The amazing thing about her is that her fans don't seem to mind. Like, they actually seem to like it that she doesn't really make any sense. So,
well, they're dopes.
It's a very, it's a very difficult task to try to, you know, deal with that, because the more you sort of effectively counter Sarah Palin, the more defensive her base becomes, and the more they like her.
Well, Betsy, these are the dopes that say, she's just like me, and, while she flies in a Gulfstream and then gets on the bus like a block away.
Right.
Because she's just a normal folk like them. Here's the one thing you'll love. She is going to keynote a bowling convention, which is pretty much where all the great thinkers of our day go to debut their ideas. I believe that's where the theory of relativity was first put forth. Yeah, she is just an oddity, isn't she? I mean, I know there are some people that say, oh, there's just no way, if you look at actual polling, that she could be elected. I mean, doesn't it say 60-70% of the American people don't think she's qualified, right? So we're not all crazy.
It's true, but, you know, she still has pretty good numbers within the Republican Party. So, I mean, I don't think she could ever win a general election. I think she'd probably be God's gift to the Democratic Party if she won the Republican nomination. But she still, I mean, she has a shot at that. I really do believe that. I mean, there's no one else they have that can touch her in terms of, you know, the passion of the base, the name recognition. She's the star.
Yeah, we can only hope, Betsy, that they continue to go farther and farther to the crazy teabag right. Because, when she's the big thinker in the Republican Party, wow.
That's
we got
true.
Fun.
I mean, you know, but we do also, Richard and I write about this in our introduction, that she's a sort of double-edged phenomenon for the left, because while she might be good for Democrats in that she can't actually win a national election, she also is a very poisonous person to have participating in our political debate. And you saw this in the whole death panel debate. You know, she brought that term into circulation, and that was a really, really difficult thing for Obama and the Democrats to deal with. So, I mean, there are real negative consequences to having her out there, even as she might actually be good for the Democrats in terms of, like, the short-term electoral calculus.
Right. Oh, no. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Betsy. That's the more serious side of this, that I remember even starting from her speech at the Republican convention, I thought, oh, my God, this is another Tina Fey thing. This is Mean Girls. I mean, she really is injecting a sort of poisonous, I think, invective into it. I mean, because you're right, everything she comes out and says is just, he pals around with terrorists, he has death panels. I mean, it's really, mean-spirited and poisonous, don't you think?
It is. I mean, she's still carrying that. You know, she's still emphasizing that one of her major regrets about the campaign is that it wasn't nasty enough. She's out there saying this. And, you know, it's amazing to me that there's such an appetite for that, but I think there really is. And she speaks to this base of the Republican Party that is extremely disaffected and angry. And it is, I do think there are some long-term dangers for the Democrats as well, because she has this, I mean, it's all fake, right? But she has this populist appeal. She presents herself as this every woman representing, you know, the average person's hockey mom, hockey dad's interests. But, you know, in reality, that's a total sham, because all of her policies actually would benefit rich people. But, you know, the fact is that actually working people are really hard pressed right now, and they are frustrated with what's going on in Washington, and they do see that the bailouts have been, you know, basically a disaster for everyday people, the bank bailouts, and Obama is too close to Wall Street. So you have all of those things going on in Washington, and I think that does create a very, you know, ripe opening for this sort of right-wing populism that she's very adept at exploiting.
Well, Betsy, you are doing the Lord's work, and I applaud you for it. The book is Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, and an American Nightmare. You can go to stephaniemiller.com and click on the banner ad right there and pick it up. It's a Christmas gift, a holiday gift extraordinaire.
Yes.
Betsy, thanks so much for taking time for us. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, you too. There she goes, Betsy Reed, co-editor of Going Rouge. It's on my coffee table as we speak. All right.
Your coffee table in New York.
Yes. Yes.
Which is a small coffee table.
That's right.
Yes.
Much smaller than the one here in Los Angeles.
Well, it's a smaller book than the actual Going Rogue.
Okay.
All right. 43 minutes after the hour. Jim Ward, when we come back, will play another edition of What the Hell Did Dennis Miller Mean?
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Coming up after. after this commercial, I will be talking even louder.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 48 minutes after the hour, the Dow is up 27 points. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter coming up to discuss Afghanistan in just a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we have Carrie in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show on Sarah Palin. Hi, Carrie.
Hey there. I'm one of those dopes who loves Sarah Palin.
Oh, you're not that dopey.
Well, you just said everyone
are.
Who is a dope. Anyway,
well, I said the people that say she's just like them and they don't realize she's flying in on a Gulfstream jet and then getting on the bus at the last minute.
Is that just like you, Carrie?
If you had just made $7 million on a book, why not just spend the money on that?
I'm talking about the people that keep saying she's just like me. She's not just like them.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was wondering, my question was, why is it MSNBC and Air America constantly talk about Sarah Palin, but yet the other channels never speak about her? I watch all the channels.
Never speak about
never?
Her? She's on Fox at
never,
every
well,
minute.
Well, not never, but you guys speak about it each day or multiple times per week. They speak about maybe once a week. I just don't understand why you
when
guys
she, when
promote
she,
her so
when
much.
She opens her mouth.
She's comedy gold, that's why.
Yeah.
She's comedy gold. That's why we talk about her.
Are you against strong women?
Yes. All right. Thank
women?
You for calling. Yes,
yeah,
I am.
Obviously.
Thanks. Clearly I am.
Strong,
women shouldn't be in charge of anything.
Intelligent, articulate women who read, what now? What does she read? Nobody knows.
I don't
Look,
remember.
I'm sure Sarah Palin is a nice enough person. However.
No, she's the nastiest sure. woman that has ever been in politics,
I'm just trying
in my
to make
opinion.
A, I'm trying to make a point here. However,
what do you mean you're sure she's a nice woman?
I'm sure she's a nice enough woman, you know, when you talk to her or whatever.
You're basing that on what?
But, let me continue, Stephanie. But there are other women in the Republican Party that have the necessary gravitas to be president of the United States. I may disagree with every single position they hold, but someone like Kay Bailey Hutchinson could hold the presidential office. Sarah Palin cannot.
Yes, that is true, and she also is the nastiest woman in politics, in my opinion. Catherine in Tucson, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey, I've been a Steph fan for probably over almost 5 years now, and I have to disagree with you for maybe the first time in my life.
Okay. I'm going to guess Afghanistan.
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't lived in Afghanistan, but I've lived in Pakistan on and off for 30 years, okay? I speak the language. I know the people. I know the customs. And one big saying over there is, if you wait 40 years for revenge, you haven't waited long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we have decimated their land. We have killed thousands and thousands of people. We've made thousands of orphans. We have just absolutely eviscerated this country. And nothing we do in terms of military...
Are you talking about the drones?
Yes.
Okay.
And everything else for that matter, yeah. We need a jumbo-size Marshall Plan to go over there. We don't need more bombing. We don't need more drones. The only thing that's even going to put a Band-Aid on anything is economic and people on the ground helping, actual helping, rather than trying to bomb them into submission. Genghis Khan couldn't defeat them. Alexander the Great couldn't mm-hmm. defeat them. The Russian Empire, the Russians could not. The British could not. What makes us think that we can?
Well, I don't think we're trying to defeat them. As I understand the president's plan, believe me, I read the whole New York Times piece about what the strategy is. And you know,
what strategy? These people don't know the culture. They don't even speak the language. They can't read the newspapers. I can.
Well,
I know what I'm seeing.
Afghanistan is different than Pakistan.
No. I mean, the language is similar enough and the culture is similar enough.
Right, but they're different countries.
It's closer than Iowa.
So, I mean, let me just ask you, Catherine, as a woman, you're just okay with us getting out tomorrow and leaving, you know, the Taliban to do as they will?
No, I'm okay with getting most of the military out and sending economic aid, which will, quote-unquote, win hearts and minds.
Okay. All right, Catherine, thank you.
That's, you know, that's got to be, should be part of the strategy if we're, you know, but we don't have enough people to do that.
No.
Yeah. Jim, I was curious your take on the Osama bin Laden story. He may be slipping back and forth from Pakistan to Afghanistan, or the U.S. might not have a clue, apparently.
Or he's dead, which is my theory for a long time.
And I think that is true as well.
Why do you think that, Chris?
Well,
we haven't heard from him in a long time.
Clearly phony.
Like, absolutely.
The, you know, suddenly he's discovered Grecian formula and his beard is black. Look, it's a new film. See?
Come yeah, on. And each tape that's released has a bit more generational loss. You know, which
right.
You know, when you tape something over and over and over again, you're going to get generational loss.
What the hell do you get a dialysis machine and a dub machine?
Right.
In a cave.
Yeah, I just
how can you dub that many times?
I think he's long gone. He was sick when 9/11 happened. Yeah. I think he's dead now.
So President Obama's security advisor James Jones said bin Laden believed hiding mainly in a rugged area of Pakistan, maybe periodically slipping back into Afghanistan. But Obama's Pentagon chief said the U.S. has lacked good intelligence on bin Laden for a long time. It's been years.
Yeah, because he's dead.
Jones said the best estimate is he's somewhere north Waziristan. Sometimes on the Pakistani side of the border, sometimes on the Afghan side. Mm-hmm. Gates said that we don't know for a fact where Osama bin Laden is, although he agreed his likely location is north Waziristan.
In the ground, yes. that's probably where he is.
I've got to know if Jim is right on that someday. But, I guess we'll find out.
It's the Bush administration, it was better for them to have Osama bin Laden alive and Tillman dead. Because,
right, but I think the Obama administration doesn't really know. I mean, we don't have any evidence that he is or isn't, right? I mean, it's... anyway, all right.
But,
let's play another edition of what the hell did Dennis Miller mean, and more importantly, why is it funny again?
This is exactly what morons do nowadays. They ask for their 15 minutes. They step up with the Warhol waiver. We give them their 15. It's a bad 15, and then they start whining about it. You know something? If there's any justice in the universe, they'd give these morons their own reality show and make them move into a house with the Balloon Boys family and the Octomom. Just make them all sit in there for a summer together and stew in each other's insipid juices. I'm just proud of our president when they showed him. It was just nice to finally see him not bowing to somebody, you know? He could have made these two people, he could have made them czars, Billy.
See, that's funny, Jim, because it's a couple of current events that he strung together there.
This is like Chinese acrobats bending over backwards, checking themselves in the mirror for cellulite. Chachi. This is one-third whiny, one-third creepy, one-third boring. I would call the French scumbags, but be a disservice to bags filled with scum, chachi.
All right. See, once again, Jim Ward's rendition of Dennis Miller much funnier than the actual... Dennis Miller. Okay. I thought I was going to make them czars, Billy.
I just hope President Osama's got his Kevlar turban on today. Chachi.
These are the jokes, folks.
Oh, boy. You can apparently, Chris, get 3 hours of that somewhere.
Oof.
If you have your radio
yikes.
Turned to the right
yeah.
Okay. Wow. All right. So the president went to, I was hoping to knock some heads together on health care at the Capitol. Was it yesterday?
Yes, it was.
I was hoping he would hit Joe Lieberman with a big bag of flour and perhaps an anvil, but no.
Joe Lieberman, douche.
Or a douche.
The douche-tastic senator from Edna.
What if he would have thrown a douche at Joe Lieberman?
That'd be funny.
Oh, my God.
Would be able to duck as quickly as his boyfriend George W. did?
Hey, what he did do is appeal directly to their desire for history-making change and their short-term political fears Sunday and urging them to stand together, overhaul the nation's health care system. We will be back with what the president had to say and where we're at with health care. Celebrity stack and much more. Oh, and Scott Ritter on Afghanistan as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Minutes after the hour, the Dow is up 21 points. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter coming up to talk Afghanistan in about a half an hour. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. The new pictures of Max and Fred's trip across the country on Fed Airways are up there. Mama's boy dog, yes. Jim,
yes.
I think currently all of my... It's been a long morning. You missed the beginning of it. However, the landlords still won't let me put a dog door in, so Fred peed in the house, and Max hasn't pooped yet, and I had to go where I was going to be late, and so I left the back door open, so probably all my stuff is gone now. And it's a long story, but good luck to me here in New York. It's
Does your backyard have a fence?
I've been picking up diarrhea because they don't have the right food yet all weekend, and it's been a long weekend.
Does your backyard have a fence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
It's a little patio that, you know, yeah, exactly.
All right. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're big dogs. And
they might jump over that fence.
No,
they're
riding it's a really, really high fence.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. StephanieMiller.com is the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Or a surly associate producer Rebecca Baker. Do we still have her montage?
Yes.
Jim, you missed it. You know, when baby gets her first montage, it is a very, very exciting moment here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Wildly popular surly associate producer Rebecca Baker. And
what? Excuse me, Taylor.
Yes, how dare you.
Good morning, Rebecca.
What, bitch, what?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to know you're still a dumb skank.
I said I'm going to be on the TV at midnight tonight. She goes, oh, an infomercial?
Are you going to do the Flo-Bee for that hair of yours?
What do I do when I need a quick haircut?
Use the Flo-Bee!
You know that hate mail that you get? It's all me.
You've got mail.
Use different email accounts. I know what I'm doing.
I don't feel I get the respect I'm entitled to around here.
Shut up, Stephanie.
Because I am not one of your fans!
You, I don't like.
I hate your ass face.
F you, dumb skank. Every day it's something new with you. You need more than just help. You need, like, a therapist.
Wow, somebody drank Mama's Carnation Instant Bitch this morning.
I just wanted to apologize for calling you a dumb skank. I didn't mean it, except for the part where I called you a dumb skank. Screw you.
That's great.
See, there's someone else now in the first hour to hate me, Jim, in your absence. It's very nice. By the way, thank you, Chicago. We had a great time, Bill Press and I, in Chicago Saturday night. I bet you there will be pictures up of that on chicagosprogressivetalk.com at some point, and God knows what's going to happen there, because, as you know, I was drunk, and Bill does a lot of blow. So, anyway... But a good time was had by all. Thank you, Chicago, where they just made us the new number one show on the station there. God bless them. They got good taste.
Hey, that's
in
cool.
Chicago, Jim.
Yeah.
My kind
of town.
Exactly. By the by, I have an unsolicited testimonial from somebody. Oh, Dan and his wife. Dan's wife, Peggy, is a big fan of ours. They live in western New York by Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
Where Mama began her career as Sister Sleaze.
That's right.
On the Brother Weeze Morning Circus. Peggy subscribes to the Stephcast. Oh, what a fabulous idea, especially around the holidays, Chris.
Yes.
Only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance.
What a wonderful holiday present.
For everyone.
Get one for every night of Hanukkah.
Hey, yes. There you go.
She went out and immediately bought an MP3 player so she can listen to you every day while driving to and from work. Over the past several years, I bought her stuff from the Steph store, Cafe Press, as gifts. She proudly displays the license plate on her bright yellow Dodge Neon. Oof. Anyway, there aren't many gifts left. I haven't already bought her, so I'm desperate for an idea or two about what else I can get her. Well, Chris, funny he should ask. First of all, I would buy everything in the Steph store. There's got to be a hoodie or something you don't have.
The clock is awesome. It keeps me on time every day.
A dog sweatshirt, something. And in addition, you could go to any of Mama's proud sponsors, ProFlowers.com, Coffee USA, Pajamagram, Say Anything, The Game, Identity Guard, or buy a GM car. And please, tell them Stephanie sent you, won't you?
Please.
Uh-huh.
And type in Stephanie in the referral box at anywhere.
Please.
Yes. Anywhere you see a referral box, type Stephanie.
Please. A lot of people inquiring after my box in Chicago on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is going to be my book title, Different City, Same Old Box.
Hmm.
Okay. Speaking of which, Julie, our official beaver reporter, has sent us some beaver stack. Bad night in Beaver County, Jim, sadly.
Oh.
Outside of Pittsburgh.
Sounds tragic.
Julie writes, Steph, guessing liquor was involved. Police say Beaver County woman shot in the leg after throwing a rifle. A Beaver County woman was shot in the leg when a rifle discharged during an argument in a garage. Yeah, that never ends well.
No.
As the state police in Beaver, it's a beaver and a rifle in a garage. It's not
a good combination.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had a
shot.
Yes, the woman, the police say that she was inside the garage at her residence, arguing with a family member. According to police, she picked up a loaded rifle and threw it across the garage. On impact, the rifle discharged, and the bullet struck the victim in the upper thigh. Well, she made her point, though, didn't she, Jim?
Yeah, but she's out of her freaking mind. You throw a loaded gun?
It's like an exclamation point with ammunition.
Yeah.
So there, and that's my point. Ow! Okay. All right, Christopher, how is Jazz acclimating? My dogs in New York, I don't know, Jim, Fred is still getting roughed up by the tough New York dogs. I'm getting to be an overprotective mother now. I'm like, stop it, get away from him! Because they like to slam him down and stuff. It's very upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
Got to toughen him up a little bit.
Yeah.
So how is Jazz liking the Norma Desmond house?
The Palatial Miller compound?
Mm-hmm.
He's actually taken to it. He likes it now. He's a little bit skittish because there's a certain spot in your kitchen where if you walk over the hardwood floors, it creaks.
Yes.
And that drives him crazy. And so he just zooms right out of the room whenever that happens. But,
well, that's where the bodies are buried.
Yeah. But when he's running around the house, he doesn't take into account that there are hardwood floors. And so sometimes he misjudges the speed, and he goes skittering across the floor. It's kind of
cute. But he likes it. Imagine when you have to go back to your thatch hut when I get the rented. He's going to be like, Daddy, are we poor again? Daddy, what? Cat food? Oh, by the way,
what?
My realtor called. I had to say no. Get this.
What?
What would you guys have done? Five guys wanted to rent my house, all musicians.
Oh, boy.
They wanted a big reduction in the rent, and they wanted me to move all my exercise equipment.
So they could build a studio downstairs.
Yes, a band.
Five musicians. I said no.
No.
I mean, I'm desperate, but I'm not that desperate.
Well, they would have gotten...
Five musicians. That seems like a good idea. I'm sure there'll be no
what
damage
could possibly
there.
Go wrong? Yeah.
You have to get a huge deposit out of them.
So you and Jazz dodged that bullet.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Not taking that that offer. All right. Anyway, but here's what you can do. You can get a cat cam.
Mm-hmm.
They did a study, Chris. Here are the fun facts from the cat study on what cats do.
All right.
Do you have fun facts? I can't find mine. 50 house cats were given collar cameras that took a photo every 15 minutes. Based on the study, about 22% of the cats' time was spent looking out windows. 12% used to interact with other family pets. 8% spent climbing on chairs or kitty condos. And 6% sleeping. What surprised me were how active the cats were. I believe my three cats were sleeping during the day, said the animal behavior scientist who collected the data for Nestle Purina. Friskies, Brent. I'm guessing that they're going to say they spent all their time eating Friskies.
I'm
what
sure.
Say
well, look, it's another shot of delicious Friskies. And then yet another. And there's the litter box, the result of the eating all the Friskies.
The 777 photos studied show the cats looking at television, computer, DVDs, or other media 6% of the time and hiding under tables 6% of the time. Coming in at 5% was playing with toys, eating, or looking at food, finished at 4%. That's what Jazz is doing.
Looking at food?
Just looking at it.
Yeah.
Just willing it to turn into something better.
You know what I think he's doing? I think he's looking out the windows at the squirrels. Because we don't have squirrels in my neighborhood. It's very urban where I live.
Yes.
So I think he's looking out the windows at the squirrels and just going nuts that he can't do anything about it.
There's a lot of critters out there.
Yeah.
It's like watching Animal Planet.
It really
out the
is.
Windows at my house. All right. Jim, did you want to hear my big Tiger Woods joke Saturday night in Chicago?
It's
Slatem, Jim. Slatem. I said, it seems like it's just getting worse and worse with Tiger. There's more and more women. After a while, you're thinking, was he playing 9 hoes or 18 hoes?
Hey!
Because it's a cool
There's a,
joke
some
about how many
audio
hoes.
That surfaced where he talks about, I've got a lot more holes to play.
Oh.
I think you've done enough hole playing, actually. It seems
oh,
to me.
Oh, dear. The fourth, those of you that are keeping track, the fourth alleged
Tiger Woods' mistress has lawyered up.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I was going through the airport. It's hard to take him seriously now. Have you seen that big giant poster of him and all the phallic-looking caucuses in the airport? I'm like, oh, jeez.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Something about looking for opportunity. I was like, no.
No.
Yeah, it's like when I watch Elliot Spitzer on MSNBC. Smart guy, lot of good points, and I'm just thinking hooker. I'm thinking hooker.
Lots
Tara
and lots
Charles,
of hookers.
Hooker. Mm-hmm. Stock market hooker.
And writing them checks and putting four hookers in the memo line.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good idea. Good plan.
That's the thing with these guys. It's the stupidity. It's the message on the phone machine.
It's wanting to be caught, I think, on the subliminal level. If you're writing for hookers on the check.
I don't know.
It's for hookers. Just so I have that for my accounting purposes.
Yeah. Please catch me. Please stop me. Stop me before I bleep again.
And Jim, I think you mentioned this. He does seem completely unaware of recording devices. He's just, hi, it's Tiger Woods.
You know, the
golfer.
Famous golfer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were having sex last night, it occurred to me that I probably shouldn't leave a message on your answering machine. Oh!
Damn it!
Yeah, could you change your number so it doesn't come up on my phone? Because I would hate for anybody to find out about me, Tiger Woods, the famous golfer, doing anything behind my wife's back. Is this... What's that beeping? Okay, the TMZ has learned this mistress. That's number four.
Mm-hmm.
Claims the relationship didn't originate in Vegas. It started near Tiger's Home in Orlando. She is a former VIP cocktail server.
Oh.
So she's a little class above of the other cocktail waitress, Hoochie Mama, the last one. This is a VIP.
Not to say anything
server.
Bad against cocktail waitresses.
No,
I'm sure we
I
have plenty of
one.
Them in our. Yes, you did.
I used to be one, and I was an awful one. People used to leave me like a quarter for a tip.
Oh,
well, thank you. Now I can make that phone call I've been hoping to make. That's you know why I didn't get a lot of tips, Jim, because I was too fat from eating too many goldfish crackers until my kimono almost exploded at the Fung Lum.
Is that near the Victoria Station?
It's just down the hill. From
just
that.
Down the hill from Victoria Station at Universal City?
They're both gone now.
Okay, yeah.
She, the woman claims she became having the affair with Tiger back in 2004 when she was 20. It's just the affair lasted for more than 2 years. That's number four for those of you on your scorecards. On your golf scorecard, get the little pencil. That's number four. Okay, Star Jones says Tiger Woods should talk to a fellow adulterer Barbara Walters.
Oh, dear. Oh.
I don't think Star Jones has gotten over that whole thing. She says she should sit down with Barbara. Tiger, there's a lot of adult was before as I understand. She wrote an entire book where she detailed her own affair, Star said, and got paid a lot of money. She'd be a good choice. That would be like the pot calling the kettle black. I'm not sure she'd be sympathetic, but she can't be as judgmental. So, she recommends sitting down with Barbara. I'd like to see him sit down with Tom Brokaw myself.
Tonight, international golf celebrity Tiger Woods, whose mistress cut is up to nine. Alleged mistress cut. Most notably, Kalika Mukan, Mindy Lawton, and Rachel Luchitol, who claimed all he cared about was lust. He's a selfish, heartless man who only cares about lust.
Have you seen the pictures of Katie Couric dancing when she got the, what was it, the CBS gig?
Yes.
The nighttime gig, yeah, backing that ass up. Wow, we. Good for her.
Doing the white man overbite while she was dancing?
I wonder
dancing?
If there's any.
Was she
is doing
the
video?
Elaine Bennis kick?
Yeah, I wonder if there's any video of Tom Brokaw doing the lombada or the.
I did not do the lombada. I did, however, do the stroll, the hustle, the locomotion as popularized by Little Eva, the camel walk, the Philly dog, the boogaloo. The peanut butter jelly time, and of
electric
course,
slide.
The holy golly.
The peanut electric butter slide. Jelly time.
Electric slide.
Electric slide.
It's always peanut butter
sorry,
jelly time, I understand, at the Broke.
It's peanut butter jelly time.
It's peanut butter jelly time. Unfortunately, I still have some peanut butter stuck to the roof of my mouth. But to explain my inability to pronounce the letter L.
Is that what it is? That's what happened to dogs when you give them peanut butter. It takes them 3 days to get it down. He was in a, unfortunately, a three-car pothole up over the weekend on the Bruckner Expressway. Did you hear about that?
Yes. I thought it was you because it was a woman in an SUV not wearing her seatbelt, clearly.
No, my car's not here yet. My crooked car company still has it. That'll be here maybe by June, I think.
and then it will cost me $1 million to get it back.
That's what you want in Manhattan, in an SUV.
Yeah, and then $1 million to store it in Manhattan. I really don't understand.
I'm leaving it at the guy's house that owns the show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money so he can cut the brake line.
Okay, so you pay $50 to take the train up there.
Right. And so you can drive,
so you can drive your car back down to the city where you to go park. Grocery shopping.
I didn't think this whole thing through. Like most disastrous decisions in my life. Oh, 21 minutes after the hour, back with more Celebrity Stack, the Jobs Summit, and the healthcare debate as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
And we'll be right back.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 26 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere to join the party. Scott Ritter, UN Weapons Inspector, joins us next to talk Afghanistan and much more. So, Tiger Woods not the only one involved in a domestic dispute. Paul Anka.
Who? Huh?
Paul Anka and his wife were involved. I guess having his baby was not enough for him, apparently. although it was a lovely way of saying how much she loves him. Police cars rolled out to the home of music legend Paul Anka Thursday morning after cops received 2 911 calls about a domestic dispute between Paul and his wife, Hannah.
Do you remember the time I beat you to a bloody pulp?
Oh, no. No, no.
Allegedly. Around the same time last year, Anna was arrested for a felony domestic battery after she allegedly threw a piece of ice at Paul and
Do
split his head open.
Do you remember the time you split my head open with a piece of ice?
Your face is glowing.
Morning yesterday. Ow!
Oh, boy. By the way, did you hear SNL's taking heat for doing that Tiger Woods skit because Rihanna was the guest star? They did a, you know, he had like a golf club through his head, and he had a sign saying "Help me" and whatever. But Rihanna was the musical guest, so people felt like they were making fun of, you know, domestic violence.
Oh, oh, well.
Meanwhile, Jay-Z says
a bit of a stretch.
Jay-Z says he regrets not releasing a line of umbrellas when Rihanna's song came out. Apparently, Umbrella was such a was such a huge hit that people used to bring umbrellas to her concerts until they had to stop because the audience members continually injured themselves. In what was the worst, second worst idea after Bat Day at Yankee Stadium, where they would give drunken Yankee fans bats.
Yeah. Or nickel beer
and bats and beer
at Comiskey Park.
Good
28
plan.
Minutes after the hour, two things that do go together, Scott Ritter and the Stephanie Miller Show. That's next.
Oh. Stephanie Miller.
You drunk.
Just praying those holiday party cell phone pictures of me dancing don't surface somewhere. Oh, dear God.
What?
33 minutes after the hour. Yeah, I was getting very slutty with the big CEO's 23-year-old son. As I have a vague memory of that, I don't think that's going to end well for me.
Oh,
what's
boy.
Stephanie, what's going to a holiday party like?
We can't afford for you to go, Cinderella.
Okay.
You get back home and polish my doorknob.
Yes, ma'am.
You have to throw a big party before you get through.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, my birthday's next month.
Oh, good. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've just been getting ready for that.
Oh, then you can have the house.
Yeah.
That'll be a nice birthday.
Yeah, Steph, I don't want you to rent the house until after my birthday, because I'm already planning the party.
Of course. I'll get right on that.
All right.
All right. Out of my way. I have an important man on the phone. Scott Ritter, UN Weapons, former UN Weapons Inspector. You were on the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm fine. It was I saw you in L.A. last time. Tonight you're doing a big do in San Francisco.
In the Oakland area. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is actually for a great cause as well, right? It's for the VeteransProject.org?
Absolutely. This isn't an anti-war or anti-Bush or anti-anything. This is a pro-veteran event. This is about taking care of the men and women who honor us collectively by serving in the armed forces of our country. They're exposed to, you know, stresses that are unimaginable to most Americans, and they pay a price for that physically and mentally. And when they come home, more often than not, we tend to discard them. We applaud them, we pat them on the back, and then we push them to a side. And it's about time we stand up and recognize that we owe these guys a debt, and the biggest way to pay off that debt is to take care of them.
Scott, I have to get your take on Afghanistan. You're obviously uniquely qualified to comment, and I know opinion is all over the place on this, but, you know, I remember the president saying, and, you know, and you and I talked about this at the time, that, you know, he felt that the Afghan troops, that our troops were never adequately equipped or given a strategy, you know, and he was going to finish the job. So his speech was not necessarily a surprise, was it?
No, I mean, what was most surprising about the speech wasn't the conclusion. I think we can all agree that this president was inclined, you know, to not only continue but perhaps expand the Afghan mission. What was surprising was here we have an articulate and you know, intellectually sound president, as opposed to maybe what was in the White House the previous 8 years, and he insulted our collective intellect with the presentation he made. He, you know, if you're going to tell me about a solution, and again, sending 30,000 troops to Afghanistan with an 18-month deadline to solve a problem that's never been solved, you know, that's his solution. But you have to define the problem accurately. And instead of listening to, you know, this very intelligent man lay out the facts in a compelling fashion, we simply got a rehash of the old fear-based motives that the Bush administration has used all along. 9/11, if we don't stop them there, they're going to come here. You know, that just doesn't fly anymore, especially since the problem set that he defined is not being addressed by the solution set. The solution set, there's no linkage between the two. So, you know, I'm extraordinarily disappointed in the president, not only over his decision. As you said, we both agree that we sort of knew what the decision was going to be.
Right.
But the methods upon which he built this decision and based this decision and sold this decision.
Scott, I have to say I disagree with you. I mean, I totally understand your point of view on it. It's just, as someone that clearly you were right on the front lines in terms of saying there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. This is a totally unnecessary war. You know, I do think that, you know, I don't know if you happen to read the New York Times piece on, you know, the how the whole Afghanistan strategy came about. I mean, I do feel like this was so antithetical to the Bush administration that he really thought this through and really consulted. And it may be wrong, Scott, but I really feel like he's not doing a political thing. He's doing what he thinks is best. And it is a risky strategy, the, you know, escalate quickly and get out quickly. But is there a chance it might work?
I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell that it might work, and I honestly believe that the president understands this. I mean, how can it work? I mean, first of all, we come down to the definition of the problem. You know, there is not a homogeneous, singular enemy that we're facing in the AFPAC theater. You know, you can't link the Taliban with al-Qaeda. Do we really need 100,000 American troops to defeat the 200 to 300 al-Qaeda operatives functioning on Afghan soil? Are the Taliban really the enemy, or are they a legitimate expression of decades of frustration on the majority Pashtun population?
I understand it, Scott, the strategy is to, you know, it's a quick jolt, as the New York Times is saying, a quick jolt of extra forces that is enough to knock the Taliban back on their heels for the Afghans to take over the fight. You just don't think that's possible.
The Afghans have never taken over the fight. First of all, what is Afghanistan? Are we seriously saying 18 months that we can achieve that which has never been achieved in the history of Afghanistan, installing a viable central government that has legitimacy down at the local grassroots level? This has never occurred. And suddenly we, an outside power who are not co-religionists, people who do not have a good track record in that country are going to come in with an extra boost, as if, hey, here's a double latte of caffeine, a caffeinated coffee, boom, and everything's going to be fine. It's absurd. It insults the intellect. And plus, 30,000 troops. But, you know, when Mikhail Gorbachev did a review of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan in 1985, with an eye of saying, we need to, let's see if we can win, he was told you need at a minimum 650,000 troops, and that calculus has not changed. So this is, again, it's an insult to the intellect of Americans from a president who has the capacity to do a much better job.
Well, Scott, so let me ask you this. If you were president, what would you do? What should we do in Afghanistan?
Well, the first thing is to recognize that this is a problem set that doesn't have a military solution. So this extra caffeinated 30,000 troops isn't solving anything. It's actually, if you look at the track record of America's involvement in Afghanistan, it's documented fact that the more we interface with the Afghans in a military fashion, the more empowered the Taliban get. So all we've done is actually give a super double dose of caffeine to the Taliban. They will emerge from this surge much stronger with much greater legitimacy, and they will make disengagement much greater. So demilitarize this conflict. Get the troops out of the problem set.
But how else do we solve it then, if not militarily? Then what do we do?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to sort of divorce ourselves from the hubris and arrogance that there's an American solution to an Afghan problem, because this is inherently an Afghan problem.
Yeah. But there is an American problem in it, isn't there, if they regroup again from that area, whether it's Pakistan or Afghanistan, and attack us again, right? I mean, then it is an American problem.
The last time I studied the history of 9/11, which was yesterday, I tend to recall that the majority of the planning and support activities for the 9/11 attacks occurred in a place called Hamburg, Germany.
Yeah, that is
so
true.
You know, why don't we super caffeinate Germany? Why don't we send 30,000 troops to clear of Hamburg? But the point is again, we're allowing misconceptions about the reality of Afghanistan to color this age-old fear-based tactic.
But then take me back.
They're going to come here is absurd.
Then take me back. When 9/11 happened, if you were president, what would you have done? You would not have attacked Afghanistan.
I'm actually on the record on that in October of 2001, and with a debate with a gentleman who might be relevant to the current policy, Richard Holbrooke, where I told Richard Holbrooke that this is not and cannot be viewed as a war on terror. So the first thing I would have done is define the problem in correct fashion, recognizing that, A, the United States is not legitimately or realistically going to wage war against global terrorism, that this is a response not only of the United States, but the world to a criminal action, and we must address those who perpetrated this as criminals, and I would have sought to delegitimize them and isolate them. And the number one methodology that I recommended at that time was to use the interface between Pakistan and Taliban. Pakistan at that time was the only nation to have diplomatic relations with the Taliban, to use that to approach the Taliban, seek common language with the moderate element of the Taliban. Richard Holbrooke shouted me down. There is no moderate Taliban. Today, I think we have everybody talking about it. We need to reach out to the moderate element of the Taliban.
After 9/11, even though the Taliban was harboring al-Qaeda, who had just attacked us on 9/11, you wouldn't have done anything militarily.
There's not a military solution. Right. First thing I wouldn't have done is define it as a purely military operation. Right. I mean, look, at the bottom line, if I got Osama bin Laden isolated in a safe house in Gardez, I might have some of my military acquaintances pop in and pay him a visit. So, you know, there can be a military aspect to this, so to speak, but the overall strategy definitely should not have been a military strategy. Mm-hmm. And here we are 8 years down the road with nothing but military options available to us.
Scott, always great to get your take. May I just say, actually, it makes me hotter when we argue than when we agree. So this is new for us. It was illuminating and also depressing. Thank you for that. In San Francisco, how can people find out how to come see you in San Francisco area tonight?
We have a link up on our website.
I think you probably have the better contact information. Yep. I don't have that data in front of me. I'm arriving at the airport. They're picking me up, and I'm going to speak.
That's all you know. It's the Veterans Project, theveteransproject.org, and you can go to stephaniemiller.com to find out how to come see Scott tonight in San Francisco area. Scott, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, there he goes.
Yep.
You know
what?
He's
right.
He may be changing my mind. He may have done that.
I mean, I'm still concerned about securing the nukes in Pakistan.
Right.
But,
and I'm concerned about, you know, the vacuum that will be left, you know, once we leave. However, it's absolutely pointless for us to be there.
We can't win in Afghanistan.
Right.
We can't even define what winning is in a realistic manner.
I'm going home.
I'm the
44 minutes after the hour. All right, we will dive into that because I have some thoughts. And if you read the New York Times article, it just really thought provoking. Both that and Scott Ritter. That's what our show's all about, you know.
I thought it was about fart jokes.
Mostly. Hmm. We sometimes we sneak in some thought provoking tidbits when you're not looking. 44 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She listens to right-wing wacko radio, so you don't have to anymore. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 49 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Abby in San Francisco. You going to see Scott Ritter tonight?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Steph, you know I love you, and I hardly ever disagree with you about anything. But I was listening to Scott Ritter, and I was thinking that that's exactly it. Since Obama's speech, I've been feeling this sense of unease about the whole thing and thinking...
A general sense of ennui?
Unease.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a sense about
I'm
you all the
both.
Time, Steph, but not right now.
Yes.
No, I was listening to Obama and I was thinking, Bush could be saying this, Bush could be saying that,
mm-hmm.
Bush could be saying that, and there was nothing that he said to me that made me feel any better about Afghanistan. And finally, you know, I'm listening to Scott Ritter, who obviously knows what he's talking about. And, you know, this is the problem. There is no military solution to this problem. And
mm-hmm.
So what are we doing? Why do we continue to send our troops to die over there?
Well, you know, but when you think about it, Abby, and I mean, it is a little surprising. He's, as you know, he's a former Republican. And I know.
Marine.
You know,
right.
Marine, yeah. I have to say, I don't know that I would have agreed with him. Do you, if you were president when 9/11 happened, do you think you wouldn't have had any military component to...
Respond to
9/11?
I'm not sure about that, and I'm not sure, you know, I wouldn't say that we were necessarily wrong to go into Afghanistan in the first place, but
right.
We went in there to get bin Laden. Wasn't that the whole point?
Mm-hmm.
And so what are we doing there now? And
mm-hmm.
why are we escalating? And what is going to be
Here's the thing, you know, and
here.
I've said, Abby, I don't know that the president is right. My argument has been, I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt of trying to, you know, even Frank Rich said, and he disagrees with the strategy, but he said you have to give him credit for what is a thoughtful, you know, non-political, you know, I don't know how he said it. You know, it's solving the biggest Rubik's Cube of American foreign policy maybe ever.
No,
you know,
I,
so
I,
that's
I,
all
I,
I'm saying is I think it's
no.
a tough problem.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to come out okay. I hope so as an American, but, you know.
And as you guys have been saying all along, you know, he was given the most gigantic piles of, you know, dog do that any president could possibly handle. And these problems are, some of them are insolvable. I think Bush has gone so far to wreck the world that
mm-hmm.
maybe there aren't solutions. But, you know, I don't see an end to this. I don't see us getting out.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, Abby. What if they had adopted this strategy, the Bush administration? We'd be out of there by
exactly.
now.
Exactly. What
if they had escalated when they should have and gotten bin Laden and finished this thing, we could
right.
have been out.
What if we had
had
a competent Secretary of Defense instead of Donald Rumsfeld in there at the time?
Yep, thank you, Abby. Sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
I said, but there would be no impetus to go into Iraq then.
Right.
Had we gotten Bin Laden, he couldn't have generated enough fear to start this stupid, unnecessary war.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's exactly
the whole
it.
Point was going. He said before he was, quote, unquote, elected that he wanted to go finish the job his father didn't and take out Saddam Hussein. That's what he wanted to do all along, and he used 9/11 as a way of...
Chris, give me some compare and contrast music. Can you? I've mentioned this all morning, Jim. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but, you know, long-ass article in the New York Times, front page, Inside the Situation Room, How a War Plan Evolved. But you play compare and contrast with the Bush administration, like you said. At least we have a smart, thoughtful president, I mean, that knows the cost of war. As we said earlier, that didn't just pop in like, Artie Johnson on Laugh-In and say, hey, we're going to take Saddam out, slam. I mean, if you read some of this, his advisors say he was haunted by the human toll as he wrestled with what to do about the 8-year-old war. A month earlier, he had mentioned to them his visits to wounded soldiers at Walter Reed. He said, I don't want to be going to Walter Reed for another 8 years. I mean, you know what I'm saying, Jim? I feel like he really, from a good place, is trying to make this decision, whether it's right or not.
Well,
I don't
think there may be a political calculus, too.
It's not popular, so how is it a political calculus?
But he could still be painted as being weak on defense. If he didn't go into Afghanistan.
Well, if you look at I just got to read a couple bits to you. If you didn't read this in the New York Times, but as his top military advisors ran through a slideshow of options, Mr. Obama expressed frustration. He held up a chart showing how reinforcements would flow into Afghanistan over 18 months and eventually begin to pull out, a bell curve that American forces would be there for years to come. I want this pushed to the left, he told advisors, pointing to the bell curve. In other words, the troops should be in sooner, out sooner. When the history of the Obama presidency is written, the day with the chart may prove to be a turning point, the moment a young commander-in-chief set in motion a high-stakes gamble to turn around a losing war. By moving the bell curve to the left, he decided to send 30,000 troops mostly in the next 6 months and then begin pulling them out a year after that, betting that a quick jolt of extra forces could knock the enemy back on its heels, enough for the Afghans to take over the fight. Mm-hmm. The three-month review that led to the escalate then exit strategy is a case study in decision-making in the Obama White House. Intense, methodical, rigorous, earnest.
Yep. He's thought it through.
Yeah. Mr. Obama peppered advisors with questions, showed an insatiable demand for information, taxing analysts who prepared 36 intelligence reports for him, and Pentagon staff members who churned out thousands of pages of documents. Exactly. Well, check out this part. He invited competing voices to debate in front of him. You know, the Bush administration didn't want to hear from anybody.
Right.
Particularly that had a different view. The decision represents a complicated evolution in Obama's thinking. He began the process clearly skeptical of McChrystal's request for more troops, but the more he learned about the consequences of failure and the more he narrowed the mission, the more he gravitated toward a robust, if temporary, buildup. Again, I get Scott Ritter's point, but John Kerry disagrees. John Kerry thinks he's narrowed the mission, you know, accurately, and that's what we need to do. So, Chris, where are you on this now? Scott Ritter brought you around?
Well, I mean, I absolutely see his points. And, yes, it's pretty stupid of us to think that we can change, you know, thousands of years of Afghanistan history with an 18-month surge. I think that's hubris on our part. That's inexcusable.
The president posed a series of questions when making this decision. Does America need to defeat the Taliban, defeat al-Qaeda? Can a counterinsurgency strategy work in Afghanistan given the problems with its government? If the Taliban regain control of Afghanistan, would nuclear-armed Pakistan be next? Jim, it's like you said, we're having this debate. He knows stuff we don't know.
Right.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
And maybe they are talking to the moderate elements of the Taliban. It would be surprising me if they weren't, actually.
Yeah.
I
think Hillary Clinton has indicated that they are willing to talk to the moderate members of the Taliban.
Obama made it clear he was ready to send more troops if a strategy could be found to ensure this was not an endless war. He indicated that the Taliban had to be beaten back. What do we need to do to break their momentum? He asked 4 days later at a meeting with the Joint Chiefs. He emphasized the need for speed. Why can't I get the troops in faster? He said, this is America's war. I don't want an open-ended commitment. So, you know, yeah, is it perhaps a risky strategy? But damn, he's pretty smart, and he's been right a lot before. So I hope he's right on this one. Maybe not, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for now and take your hate letter. So go ahead, start writing it. That's it for us today. I'd like to thank executive producer, engineer, boy toy, Chris Lavoie, Emmy Award-winning voice deity, Jim Ward, Surly associate producer, Rebecca Baker. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.